Good morning, and peace be with you. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Dorothy Wilson. I welcome you to this community of hope and transcendence. Here we seek wisdom beyond our own experience. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths, both meaningful and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. We are Unitarian Universalist. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out a card found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you're here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 5 years old. Through those doors to the left, the first room past the foyer. At the front, we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. You're invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. Children and youth are encouraged to attend religious education programs when we sing and bless our children and youth later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We would like to remind you that we do have a scent-free zone in our sanctuary during worship. If you are sensitive to chemical scents found in many personal care items, you're invited to seek refuge in these pews. We also request that you do not sit in that designated area unless you're free from any chemical scents. Essential oils are usually fine, but most perfumes, colognes, and hair products are not. I have a few announcements today. D. Evans reminds us that June 4th will be Dawn's last day. She's in the process of looking at houses to remodel. A gift card, especially from Lowe's or other Home Depot such, or money towards gift cards would be very nice. All gift cards will be given on June 4th. And also from Dee, we have an annual meeting on June 4th. It's in the newsletter and in the weekly church bulletin. And Mary Johnson would like to thank Robin Sinquist, Jerry Johnson, Nancy Kniff, Wayne Polstich, Carol McGrew, Ruth Maskow, Phil Embry, Robin Stanquist, and Paula LaFond deserve what praise and thanks for helping organize a big inside and outside cleanup. The work was hard, dirty, and joint aching, but no one complained one bit. Thank you all. Also a reminder that tomorrow night at 6:30, the Healing Energy Group will meet, and everyone is welcome to attend that. At this time, we'll have a prelude by our special accompanist, Joy. Thank you. I now invite Ben up to light our chalice as we join in our unison words for the chalice lighting. They are printed in your order of service and projected above. We gather this hour as people of faith with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs, sign this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together.
This is the mission of our faith. To teach the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, to prove that diversity need not mean divisiveness, and to witness to all that we must hold the whole world in our hands. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in our opening hymn number 2, Down the Ages We Have Trod. It's in your gray hymnal. Will the children come forward for our story for all ages? sit down here. Our story today, The Little Engine That Could, is usually viewed as a story for Christmas. But I think it's a story that's appropriate for any day. How many of you already know this story? Have you heard this story about the little engine that could? Okay. This was one of my favorite stories when I was a boy. Chug, 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 puff, 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 ding dong, ding dong, the little train rumbled over the tracks. She was a happy little train, for she had such a jolly load to carry. Her cars were filled full of good things for boys and girls. There were many toy animals, giraffes with long necks, teddy bears with almost no necks at all, and even a baby shepherd. Then there were the dolls, dolls with blue eyes and yellow curls, dolls with brown eyes and brown bobbed heads, and the funniest little toy clown you ever saw. And there were cars full of toy engines, airplanes, tops, jackknives, picture puzzles, and every kind of thing boys or girls could want. But that was not all. Some of the cars were filled with all sorts of good things for boys and girls to eat. Big golden oranges, red-cheeked apples, bottles of creamy milk for their breakfast, fresh spinach for their dinners, peppermint drops, and lollipops for after-meal treats. This little train was carrying all these wonderful things to the good little boys and girls on the other side of the mountain. She pulled along merrily. Then all of a sudden, she stopped with a jerk. She simply could not go another inch. She tried and tried, but her wheels would not turn. What were all those good little boys and girls on the other side of the mountain going to do without the wonderful toys to play with and the good food to eat? Here comes a shiny new engine, said the funny little clown who jumped out of the train. Let us ask him to help. So all the dolls and toys cried out together, please, shiny new engine, won't you please pull our train over the mountain? Our engine has broken down, and the boys and girls on the other side won't have any toys to play with or good food to eat unless you help us. But the shiny new engine snorted. I pull you? I am a passenger engine. I have just carried a big, fine train over the mountains with more cars than you ever dreamed of. My train had sleeping cars with comfortable berths, a dining car where waiters brought hungry people whatever they wanted to eat, and parlor cars in which people all sat in soft armchairs and steamed into the roundhouse. I pull the likes of you? Indeed not. And off he steamed to the roundhouse where engines live when they are not busy. How sad the little train and all the dolls and toys felt. Then the little clown called out, the passenger engine is not the only one in the world. Here is another engine coming, a great, big, strong one. Let us ask him to help us. The little toy clown waved his flag and the big strong engine came to a stop. Please, oh please, big engine, cried out all the dolls and toys together. won't you please pull our train over the mountain? Our engine has broken down, and the good little boys and girls on the other side won't have any toys to play with or good food to eat unless you help us. But the big, strong engine bellowed, I am a freight engine. I have just pulled a big train loaded with big machines over the mountain. These machines print books and newspapers for grown-ups to read. I am a very important engine indeed. I won't pull the likes of you. And the freight engine pulled off indignantly to the roundhouse. And the little train and all the dolls and toys were very sad. Cheer up, cried the little toy clown. The freight engine is not the only one in the world. Here comes another. He looks very old and tired, but our train is so little, perhaps he can help us. So the little toy clown waved his flag, and the dingy, rusty old engine stopped. Please, kind engine, called all the dolls and toys together, won't you please pull our train over the mountain? Our engine has broken down, and the boys and girls on the other side won't have any toys to play with or good food to eat unless you help us. But the rusty old engine sighed, I am so tired, I must rest my weary wheels. I cannot pull even so little a train as yours over the mountain. I can't. And he rumbled to the roundhouse, chugging, I cannot. Then indeed, the little train was very, very sad, and the dolls and toys were ready to cry. But the little clown cried out, here is another engine coming, a little blue engine, a very little one. Maybe she will help us. The very little engine came chugging merrily along. When she saw the toy clown's flag, she stopped quickly. What is the matter, my friends? She asked kindly. Oh, little blue engine, cried the dolls and toys, will you pull us over the mountain? Our engine has broken down, and the good boys and girls on the other side won't have any toys to play with or good food to eat unless you help us. Please, please help us, little blue engine. I'm not very big, said the little blue engine. They use me only for switching trains in the yard. I have never been over the mountain. But we must get over the mountain before the children awake, said all the dolls and toys. Well, the very little engine looked up and saw the tears in the dolls' eyes. And she thought of the good little boys and girls on the other side of the mountain who would not have any toys or good food unless she helped. Then she said, I think I can. And she hitched herself to the little train. She tugged and pulled and pulled and tugged. And slowly, 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 they started to move. The toy clown jumped aboard, and all the dolls and toy animals began to smile and cheer. Puff, puff, chug, chug, went the little blue engine. I think I can. Up, 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 faster and faster and faster and faster, the little engine climbed, until at last they reached the top of the mountain. Down in the valley lay the city. Hurrah, hurrah, cried the funny little clown and all the dolls and toys. The good little boys and girls in the city will be happy because you helped us, kind little blue engine. And the little blue engine smiled and seemed to say as she pulled steadily down the mountain again, "I thought I could. I thought I could. I thought I could. I thought I could." So that's a good story to remember when you're faced with something difficult. So now, go to your class. Thank you.
Our spiritual lives are filled up, our hearts are warmed by the giving of time, talents, love, comfort, and our many other human resources. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the financial contribution you make here reflect what you receive? How does our collective money transform those within and beyond our congregation's walls? This morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given. Please join in reciting the offering blessing. To the work of this church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are offerings. For things on our hearts that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowl as we enter, or from the bowl here by the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into an awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected by at our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles that you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
I now invite you to take part in responsive reading 444, which can be found in your gray hymnal. 444 at the rear of the gray hymnal. This house is for the ingathering of nature and human nature. It is a house of freedom, guaranteeing the dignity and worth of every person.
It offers a platform for the free voice, for declaring, both in times of security and danger, the full and undivided conflict of opinion.
It is a house of truth-seeking, where scientists can encourage devotion to their quest, where mystics can abide in a community of searchers.
It is a house of art, adorning celebrations with melodies and handiworks.
It is a house of prophecy, outrunning times past and times present in visions of growth and progress. We will now have a few moments of silence for contemplation or meditation. It will be ended by the chime of the bowl. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in our hymn 322, Thanks Be for These. It's in your gray hymnal, number 322, or the words are also up above.
Thank you.
May you be seated. Today I am witnessing by giving my own particular Unitarian Universalist view about how human religion got started, how Christianity has evolved since the time of Jesus, and how our Unitarian Universalist religion should continue in the future. The evolution of religion is closely related in some ways to the idea of the evolution of the idea of God. But monotheism, the idea of only one God, comes rather late in the evolution of religion. Furthermore, now a major question for religion is whether one should even talk about God, and if so, how? Is there any purpose or meaning in reality? Or is it, as Shakespeare said, a tale told by an idiot signifying nothing? How does religion, in the sense of belief in supernatural beings, get started? A widely accepted view is that humans attributed agency not only to other human beings, but also to animals that might attack them. They came to view unexplained phenomena, such as thunderstorms and volcanoes and eclipses of the sun, as also caused by unseen agents or spirits of some kind. Some conscious beings, perhaps invisible, made these events happen. They didn't just occur. Pre-civilized people believed in animism and in these unseen spirits that control their world. As far as we can tell, in pre-civilized societies, religion was not at all institutionalized. We need to remember how limited the knowledge of early humans was. They knew nothing about what causes various kinds of sickness or changes in the weather. They didn't know about the size of the earth or how long it had existed. The only way they had to get from one place to another was to walk. Much later, some of them learned to ride on animals like donkeys or horses or elephants, but still the environment that they knew was very, very limited. Humans probably did not begin to understand the role of sex in reproduction until they began to domesticate animals, such as dogs, about 12,000 BC. Although it is debatable, it seems likely that in the early time of hunters and gatherers, when animals had not yet been domesticated, all societies were matriarchal or matrilineal. Stone statues of pregnant women suggest that these early humans worshiped fertility, but did not understand why children were born. After the role of males in reproduction became known, things changed. That is also reflected in ancient mythology, which assumed the existence of many specific deities. That is also reflected in ancient mythology, which did assume these deities. A shift seems to have taken place from an emphasis on female goddesses connected with the earth, Mother Nature, to a focus on male gods located on mountains or in the heavens. With the agricultural revolution passed based on the growing of food from seeds from many seeds, many other changes in human life followed, such as urbanization and the beginning of written language. A new development in religion was the practice of viewing kings and heroes as gods. The learning and use of written language by the political and religious leaders produced scriptures which prescribe what should be believed and the need to obey these leaders. Most of our classical religions got started between 1500 and 500 before the Common Era, when only small groups of the political and religious elites were able to read and write. The message was always that leaders should be obeyed. Consider the biblical story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. What was the crime they committed? Disobedience. They were trying to figure things out for themselves rather than merely doing as commanded by the political and religious leaders. The idea arose in some places, such as Egypt, that there could be life after death. Zoroastrians and some others developed the idea that after death, the righteous would enjoy a wonderful life in heaven, while the disobedient would suffer in hell. As time passed, the various organized religions evolved, each somewhat in its own way, starting from its own unchanging and not to be questioned written scriptures, many of which are still viewed as the truth. From here, I will focus only on the evolution of the Judeo-Christian religious tradition, which is of special interest to us in this religious community. Henotheism is the word used to describe the religious view of the Jews in the earliest written records we know. The term means having faith in or commitment to one's own God, while not denying the existence of other gods to which other groups might be committed. For the early Jews, Yahweh was their warrior god who would aid them in their struggles against other peoples who also had their own gods to defend them. Yahweh displayed his supernatural power by causing miracles, which helped the Jews to escape from the Egyptians who were ruling over them, and then to defeat their new enemies, like the Philistines. According to the Bible, in Exodus 23, the first commandment that Yahweh gives to Moses is, "You shall have no other gods besides me." Other commandments were added about not killing, not committing adultery, not stealing, and not giving false testimony. Tying these social commandments to what Yahweh required made the Jewish religion uniquely moral. All religions had their rituals designed to gain the favor of their gods and goddesses. But for the Jews, what Yahweh required was moral behavior, especially toward other Jews. What made their religion unique, another thing, was the notion of a covenant between Yahweh and the Jewish people. Yahweh would be their protector, but they were to follow his commandments. The Jewish prophets constantly warned the people to keep Yahweh's commandments. In the 8th and 7th centuries BCE, when the Jews were conquered by the Assyrians and then the Babylonians, the Jewish prophets claimed that that had happened because the people were no longer keeping Yahweh's commandments, not because Yahweh was weak. When defeated, most ancient peoples would just start worshiping the gods of the conquerors. But the Jewish prophets preached a different message. Yahweh had allowed the Jews to be conquered because they were not being faithful to him. But eventually, when they had become faithful again, Yahweh would send them a new king or Messiah who would lead them to control over the whole world. Christianity marks a new development in Western religion, one with a more universal moral view influenced by the teachings of Jesus and the parable of the Good Samaritan that we learned about a couple of weeks ago. One early leader was Paul of Tarsus, called the first Christian by Unitarian minister A. Powell Davies in his book with that title, The First Christian. Paul focused on converting the many Gentiles influenced by Greek culture who were attracted to the synagogues by the ethical teachings of the Jews. These early Christians wanted to change the ethical Jewish religion that they so admired into a different religion that did not require following the Jewish rules about diet and circumcision. They provided the first believers for the new religion. But Christianity was intensely persecuted by the leaders of the already existing religions of the Roman Empire. A crucial event for Christianity was the decision of the 4th century Roman Emperor Constantine to stop the persecution of the Christians. He allowed them to worship freely for the first time, probably because of his military victory in 312 that he attributed to his faith in Christianity and the cross. In the following centuries, Christianity went from being persecuted to becoming the official religion of the Roman Empire. Not long after that, however, the power of the empire began to rapidly decline, even as the power of the Catholic Church in Europe continued until the 16th century, when the Protestant Reformation, aided considerably by the invention of the printing press, meant new competition for Catholic Christianity, especially in Northern Europe. It was the fact that ordinary people could start reading the Bible that served as the basis for Protestantism. The evolution of Christianity in Europe was also much influenced by the development of modern science. From the 16th century Copernican Revolution, which questioned the authority of the Bible by showing that the Earth was a rotating planet going around the sun like other planets, to the 18th century Newtonian Revolution that destroyed the notion of divine miracles by showing how everything happened according to the laws of nature, to the 19th century Darwinian theory of evolution that demonstrated scientifically that humans are but one species of evolving life on one planet. Freud and psychoanalysis raised questions about the extent to which human behavior was a result of rational choices rather than unconscious motives. These developments in science undermined the view that the Bible or other scriptures could give us truth about the nature of reality. Newton's physics made it difficult to believe in the possibility of supernatural miracles, while Darwin's theory of biological evolution had important negative implications about the possibility of any kind of life after death for humans. Are humans that different from other animals? As a result of these scientific discoveries, the main focus of religion shifted from what is true about the nature of reality to ethical teachings about what is good, about how humans should behave toward one another and other forms of life. Due to technological changes, the size of our human communities has changed from a rather small group to national communities, to the world community, and our view of the universe has greatly expanded to a much vaster universe that even includes billions of galaxies. The place of humans in nature has changed. from viewing humans as masters of the earth dominant over all other species, to recognizing our dependence on nature and other species. Where will religion go from here? Where should it go? First, we all should recognize that any revelation or scripture advanced by any organization, religious or political or otherwise, is not a reliable way of discovering what is true about the nature of reality. Revelation just does not give us the truth. We need to rely on science and its experimental method of discovering truth. Thus, religion needs to focus not on what is true, but rather on the issue of goodness and how we should act both individually, ethics, and collectively, social philosophy. Which values should we pursue and promote? I think the Unitarian Universalists have found a good path forward with the seven principles that enunciate our values that are on the back of your bulletin. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and use of the democratic process within our congregations and also in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And what about God? My view is that we should think of God as love. God should not be viewed as some kind of individual being, natural or supernatural. Nor is God the non-moral totality of all existence as pantheists think. I think that the term God should be used to mean a moral force working for good, also known as love. Now, does God in this sense exist? Obviously, yes. We can observe that God as love does exist, at least at some times and to some extent in some humans, and apparently even in some animals. On the issue of whether there is a force beyond our planet working for good, I think we need to be agnostic. We don't know what will happen in the future, and we are ignorant of some of the causes which have brought us to where we are now. Biological evolution on Earth seems to be dependent on chance variation and natural selection rather than any kind of design, as many theologians previously said. But is there a reason or purpose in that intricate system of chance variation and natural selection? Or is it just a happy accident that life and then higher consciousness has come to exist? We just don't know. There is much reason to be skeptical, but nevertheless, it is still possible to hope that love is not just an accidental part of reality that happens to come into existence on our planet Earth. Might love not be a fundamental and continuing force fundamental to ultimate reality itself? But whether that is the case or not, regardless of what is true, we can and should commit ourselves to our values. That should be the focus of religion now and in the future. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in our final hymn number 1 in your gray hymnal. We will sing the last verse only. with laughter drown the raucous shout. And though these sheltering walls are thin, may they be strong to keep it up and hold love. Please join in our unison words for extinguishing the chalice. And now, may we have faith in life to do wise planting, that generations to come may reap even more abundantly than we. May we be bold to bring to fruition the golden dreams of human kinship and justice. This we ask, that the fields of promise become fields of reality.
Thank you.